In the latest UN report on Yemen, it has been revealed that Yemeni children have suffered record rates of acute malnutrition, putting an entire generation at risk. The war in Yemen, now entering its sixth year, continues to claim lives, especially those of children suffering acute malnutrition at unprecedented rates. Has the international reaction been enough, as funding has fallen far short of what is needed to offset the effects of the conflict? And also, what about the economic collapse that has ensued? In this edition of The Debate, we will look at why the world looks on as Saudi Arabia continues this war with the U.S. support. Okay, let's start with our correspondent first to find out the latest about the situation in Yemen. We have Abdul Al-Awashedi, who joins us from the capital, Sana'a. This report by the UN, can you please tell us more about the depth of how the Yemeni children are suffering, and then expand more as to how, under the COVID-19, Yemen in general is coping with the pandemic?
Yeah. As you know, a report, our UN report, says that acute malnutrition is spreading among children, and severe acute malnutrition is has increased this year and about 15%. So we have a lot of problems in Yemen because of the war, because of the Saudi coalition and their siege upon Yemenis. Yemen is approaching a dire food security crisis. 80% of the people in Yemen are suffering, and they're depending on any form of help from organizations, from UN organizations. So UN knows what is happening in Yemen. They know how the humanitarian situation is getting worse and worse each day. They didn't do anything to or for Yemenis. Instead, they have removed the name of Saudi Arabia from the blacklist of children killers.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We appreciate that. That's our correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Awashedi there, talking to us from Yemen's capital, Sana'a. Let me introduce our guest. We have Aleja Magnier, who's a journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. We also have Michael Springman, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, who joins us from Washington, D.C. I'd like to welcome you both. And Aleja, if I may first start with you. This U.N. report is quite alarming. It should somewhat have been anticipated, but the depth of it maybe is not something that's very well known. And I'll start out with the first part of this report that we have picked out as a highlight, where Yemeni children suffering record rates of acute malnutrition, and this is the part that needs to be highlighted, putting an entire generation at risk. Do you find this surprising and shocking at the same time, given the fact that you're looking at a war that is now into the sixth year?
Well, Yemen was declared the world's largest humanitarian disaster by the United Nations. And it is, the UN estimate 80% of the population, that is around 24 million people, requires some form of humanitarian protection assistance, including 14.3 million who are in acute need. So we're talking about two-thirds of all districts in Yemen of the country are already in pre-famine. We're talking also about an impossible situation described by all humanitarian UN organizations that are on the ground, and they describe it as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, yet we don't have the resources that need to save the people who are suffering and who are continuously dying. And then also there's the COVID pandemic that is spreading. There are 3,500 hospitals and medical facilities in the country, but only half of these facilities are functioning. That means the country population of around 24 million will have no access to adequate health care. Now, the point is, and here is quite an hypocrisy, is I've been in Bosnia during the war, and we see the international community very happy to invest billions of dollars and euros supporting humanitarian support, help to the population, but not to stop the war. So we saw in 2019, the international community spent $2.6 billion in aid operation. In 2020, they spent only $558 million. And in 5 years of conflict, this is going to cost the international community $29 billion. Now, if we add these 29 billions to almost $100 billion spent by the Saudis, and rather than waging war on Yemen, we invested in constructing the country, we will have the richest and the most beautiful country in the world. And that is the hypocrisy, and this is where it is quite shocking to continue accepting war crimes happening every single day by the Saudis, and yet this is our best Western ally.
Oh, well, this takes a rather new turn to the conversation. So let me ask you, if I may, Michael Springman, our guest there highlights a very important point when it comes to the finances. You know, when you take a look at the humanitarian help that has come through, even though it hasn't helped as much as it should, and even though it hasn't been enough, and we're going to talk about that shortly. In terms of the ratio, you're looking at Saudi Arabia to spend almost five times as much on the war itself. And this could have, in the meantime, made Yemen one of the most, not one, but a prosperous nation within its own ranks. So why is Saudi Arabia spending the kind of money that it is on this war, do you think?
Well, it's gotten itself into a hole that it can't get out of. It has invested so much time, money, and effort into trying to destroy Yemen that it simply doesn't want to back out of it. It wants to continue on. It wants to save face. It wants to shore up the apparent Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his position there, and to show that he's really doing something for Saudi Arabia, when in fact he's not. And I think that behind a lot of this that's not brought out into the open is Israel, the apartheid entity. They have uncovered caches of Israeli weapons and ammunition. They found documents saying that the American government wants to work with Israel to control Purim Island near the Bab al-Mandeb to ensure the safety and security of Israel. Israel has in the past repeatedly intervened in Yemen on one side or another. Israel has warships patrolling the waters around Yemen, and Israel is conducts a very good relations or has great friendship with the Southern Transitional Council, which is backed by the United Arab Emirates terrorist group. So they are there, and nobody dares gainsay the Israelis because they control just about everything that happens internationally these days. They didn't even approve the sale of American weapons to the United Arab Emirates. Not the American Congress, mind you, but Israel.
So what do you think of that, Elijah Magnier, the Israeli role in the war in Yemen? I mean, is there something there that, as our guest indicated, to secure the safety of Israel, which plays a part in this war?
Well, I think Israel is today the ally of Saudi Arabia, the ally of the Emirates, and there is a normalization of the situation between the two countries, and the Saudis are still hesitant to declare it. Therefore, this relationship and the involvement of the Saudis and the Emiratis in the war in Yemen, when the Emiratis themselves say that we are on very high level of cooperation with the Israelis on intelligence and military levels, they are indeed cooperating in Yemen, and they are present with the Israelis in Yemen. And it is in the interest of Israel to control Bab al-Mandeb and to control all the maritime way, particularly trying to turn the enemy today in the Middle East from being Israel to being Iran. And they think by countering Iran and countering Yemen, that will help them to submit Iran in one way or another. That's why the Israelis are indeed present in multiple stages. They are present in Syria, where the Americans are occupying the northeast and using the American occupation forces facilities to bomb Iraq, as the U.S. ambassador said. They are trying to create havoc in Lebanon on the borders and transportation. So they want to be present in Yemen as they want to be present along with the Saudis and along with the Emiratis. That definitely.
We need to take a look at the arms sales, Michael Springman, if we can. Now, what is very ironic about this is that you are looking at, for example, this one headline reading, a deadly concoction of arms sales conflict at COVID-19, in which you have a catastrophe humanitarian-wise that's fueled by Western arms shipments. and according to this one report, is getting much worse. The irony, and I'd like to get your reaction on this, is that most of these arms come first from the U.S., followed by the U.K., France, Spain, Italy, Germany, and Canada. And yet you have some of these countries that are veto-wielding members of the U.N. who publicly say, hey, let's go for a ceasefire. Please stop this war. But then they're selling arms. So isn't that a double standard somewhat in play?
Certainly it is. These people are morons, and they are some of the countries listed that you just mentioned are some of the most hypocritical countries going. Germany always bleats about how it wants peace, and yet it supports the American wars of aggression in the Middle East. Canada keeps going on and on about how they are neutral, they are a small country, they want to be a force for peace, yet their government is firmly in the grip of the apartheid entity and is oppressing the Palestinians in Canada and doing its best to oppress the Palestinians in Palestine. So I think that hypocritical is probably a mild word to use for it. These are the people that are really responsible for the deaths of the children and the generation that's supposedly trying to grow up in the midst of starvation and disease and so forth. Yet they don't recognize reality and refuse to recognize reality. They prefer to hide behind their mask of, oh, yes, we're trying to help. We're talking about trying to help, and we're saying all kinds of good and wonderful things. But in actual fact, we're not going to take one step towards putting an end to this mess in Yemen, because it would hurt our businessmen and hurt our businesses and hurt our politicians.
I can't help but to ask you about how once Elijah Magnier, the U.S. president, referred to Saudi Arabia as milking the cow when it comes to arms sales. So how much of this is what this conflict is all about, especially when you have not only the U.S., but other countries that are selling Saudi Arabia arms, along with the UAE, and whatever is left of the coalition?
Well, if we look at arms sales, it should be bound to international law. So any country accused of war crime should not be provided with weapons from the Western countries. And if you look at the Saudi-led coalition and its allies, they are documented responsible for the highest civilian fatalities from direct targeting. Human Rights Watch documented at least 90 unlawful coalition airstrikes on homes, markets, hospitals, schools, and mosques, and other civilian buses. We're talking about wedding, we're talking about the gathering of children. But on the other hand, we see the Americans are saying very clearly, we don't want to lose the Saudi money, and we want to provide them with the weapons they need. So they continue to killing people in Yemen. We know that they are killing honest, innocent people in Yemen, but yet we don't want to give up on the money they are providing. We look at the UK. UK, they say we are examining, and they try to use all these very beautiful English words from the dictionary to soften the way to put Saudis away from being accused of war crime, and just only to provide them with the weapons they need, by looking at if there are historical breaches or if there are possible violation or pattern. What do they want more than UN documenting all these violations? And all the NGOs on the ground are saying, these are the pictures, these are the documents, and the Saudi-led coalition is really bombing civilians, and you should stop arming them, and instead of financing all these, investing all these billions to wait the war and continue the war, stop the war, stop providing Saudis with weapons, and sit around the table like they've done in Stockholm 2018, and then in Riyadh 2019, we had this good news of releasing 1,018 prisoners, but then everything has stopped, and we're back as business as usual.
Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Michael Springman, has been named as one of the most dangerous threats to U.S. national security. This goes back years ago. But yet you have in the year 2019 a report that came out that AP did a special investigation on, saying that Saudi Arabia and the UAE are giving U.S. arms to Al-Qaeda-linked groups, and they are fighting with Al-Qaeda on the ground in order to beat the Ansarullah fighters. So we can see how this can actually backfire, but yet the thirst for beating the Ansarullah fighters, which they have been unsuccessful of doing, is coming at any cost, it appears. Does the U.S. realize what game it's getting itself into, which at this point we don't know if it's still continuing or not?
Well, given the fact that the U.S. has been working with terrorist organizations ever since the beginning of the war against the Soviet Union with the Mujahideen, I think the U.S. does indeed know what's going on, and it does indeed know that it is training and supporting and giving weapons to these people and what they're doing with them. I think it's a pretend war in many instances, as I mentioned to some extent in my book, Thesis for Al-Qaeda. But I think also that the U.S. doesn't really care. It likes to manufacture dangers and conflicts and threats to American existence, even if it comes from half a world away and has nothing at all to do with the United States or the American people. However, its fear is always good. It used to be the Soviet Union that was the source of the fear. Then it was communism in general. Then it was terrorists, and then it was terrorists in particular, and terrorists in specific areas, and so on and so forth. But you can't justify this huge American military arms budget for its war machine. You can't justify the fortunes that are fueling the operation of the Central Intelligence Agency and the other American intelligence services. You can't justify the clampdown on personal liberties in the United States unless you have enemies somewhere. And like the Roman Empire, if there aren't enemies, then the United States will manufacture them either by attacking some country and creating a counterattack, or it will imagine that something is happening and claim that this is really an attack. So it's something that's been running through American politics for, well, since the end of the war, 75 years ago.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. That was Michael Springman, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia. Thank you, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Brussels, and Abdul Latif Al Wasadi, who was our correspondent, who spoke to us at the top of the hour. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitali, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. That has been commanded, and whoever honors the sacred ordinances of Allah, it is best for him in the sight of his Lord. And permitted to you are the grazing livestock, except what is recited to you. So avoid the uncleanliness of idols, and avoid false statement.
So, dear listeners, we're talking about the 30th verse of the chapter. ذَلِكَ وَمَنْ يُعَذِّمْ حُرُمَاتِ اللَّهِ فَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَهُ. Such, and whoever magnifies the sacred things of Allah is better for him with his Lord. وَأُحِلَّ لَكُمُ الْأَنْعَامِ إِلَّا مَا يُتْلَى عَلَيْكُمْ. And the cattle are made lawful for you, save that which has been recited to you. فَاجْتَنِبُوا الرِّجْسَ مِنَ الْأَوْثَانِ وَاجْتَنِبُوا قَوْلَ الزُّورِ. Therefore, avoid the filth of the idols, and avoid the false speech. So, many aspects of the Quranic phrase قَوْلَ الزُّورِ are some examples like lie, perjured witness, and unlawful songs. And of course, there have been mentioned some examples for the sanctities of Allah, such as the law of Allah, the book of Allah, the Ahlul Bayt, of course, and the Messenger of Allah, alayhimu salam. The reverence of all is to be kept. The act of perjured witness has been mentioned in the role of polytheism or disbelief in Allah. And the action of false speech is one of the major sins. A tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam denotes that the objective of false speech is unlawful singing. So, whatever has been kept holy by the Almighty Allah, the reverence of it must be kept, and it is necessary to be kept. And the orders that the Almighty Allah has put there for us must be observed and must be done with alacrity and spirit. The reverence to the Almighty Allah's orders are for our own good, because the verse says, فَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَهُ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِ. It is better for him with his Lord. And of course, the rewards remain in the hands of the Almighty Allah. The last point regarding the verse is that all of the cattle and all the quadrupeds are halal and are allowed to be used by the Muslims, except the ones we have specific orders by the Almighty Allah not to be used. Since the verse says, أُحِلَّ لَكُمُ الْأَنْعَامِ إِلَّا مَا يُتْلَى عَلَيْكُمْ. The cattle are made lawful for you, save the ones which have been recited to you. The last question regarding the verse is the meaning of false speech. We promised to you to talk about the meaning of false speech in this program.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In
this
series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Some commentators believe that false speech refers to the quality of the manner of the polytheists in the rites of Hajj in the Age of Ignorance. When they were to recite Labbaik, because they had distorted Labbaik, which is the full reflection of monotheism and worshipping to God, so sharply that it included the most hideous and blasphemous meanings. They used to say, "Yes, we accepted your invitation and came toward you, O Lord. You have not any partner save the partner who is yours. You are the possessor of him and what he possesses." This speech has certainly been a futile and vain statement, and it is the extension of false speech, which originally means a false speech, and it is out of the limit of moderation. So, the attention of the verse to the deeds of polytheists in the rites of Hajj in the Age of Ignorance does not hinder the generality of the concept. The concept is to avoid any kind of idol in any shape and form, and avoiding any kind of false speech in any sort and quality. So, in some of the Islamic narrations, the Arabic term awthan has been rendered into chess, which was used to be a kind of tool for gambling, and the phrase false speech has been rendered into unlawful singing and perjured witness. That is, in fact, as some commentators have said, this is general, not in the particular concept about these affairs. A tradition from the Prophet of Islam وسلم, indicates that one day it happened that he stood up and made a sermon among people in which he said, "False witness is equal to associating something with Allah." Then he وسلم, recited this holy verse, "فَاجْتَنِبُوا الرِّجْسَ مِنَ الْأَوْثَانِ وَاجْتَنِبُوا قَوْلَ الزُّورِ." Therefore, avoid the filth of the idols and avoid the false speech. This tradition is also a hint to the vastness of the scope of the meaning of this holy verse. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Allah ya Allah subhanallah. Allah ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allah wa la ilaha illa
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. And today we are with a new program of Spring of Truths from IRB English Radio with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. We were talking about his viewpoints regarding the theology and servitude. And today we have reached to another saying of Imam Khomeini in which he is saying, link yourselves up to this ocean, the ocean of divinity, the ocean of prophethood, and the ocean of the Holy Quran. Now, here Imam Khomeini is basically referring to what Quran says, because Quran says that your close guardian is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Prophet. And obviously, if you want to have piety, if you want to be God-weary, you need to follow Holy Quran. And here, Imam Khomeini refers to this terminology that all these things are the oceans. The way the ocean never ends. And it is so deep that when you want to dive into it, you can get lost. Or maybe you cannot have all the water. You cannot discover whatever is in the ocean. Same is the case with the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran usually looks like a book, but it is an ocean. The prophethood, the system of prophethood, the system of guidance that has been set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the ocean, and the divinity itself is the ocean. So you need to link yourself to this ocean. If you link yourself to this ocean, you will become the part of the ocean, and then you will never have an end.
Peter Snow, News at 10, Paris.
We did the first long interview with the Ayatollah.
It It is the temporary residence of the man who symbolizes the religious opposition to the Shah and who guides the movement to overthrow him. Have you considered it might be the time to compromise, to accept the concessions he's made to avoid the deaths of perhaps thousands of your followers?
If the Shah tell the truth, and he is honest in what he says, then he has to accept and submit to the demands of the people.
In any case, we were invited to the holy city of Qom to interview him there in his headquarters.
But if you do not link yourself with the ocean, you will remain as a small river maybe. You maybe remain as a small spring, but obviously you need to become the part of the ocean, as Imam Khomeini said. He also mentions that know that gratitude for the open and the concealed blessing of God, the exalted, is one of the necessary duties of servitude and devotion that must be performed by all, each according to his ability. Even though no creature is able to offer due thanks unto God, the exalted, it is God that gives us everything. And even when we thank to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we cannot offer the due thanks to him. We cannot offer this due thanks unto God. Why? Because he is unlimited. He has the extreme power. He is the extreme knowledgeable. And we, being a possible being, we are limited to him. May Allah give us this chance to understand the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Tufts University has recently published a report that compares the rate at which Americans aged between 18 and 29 have voted in U.S. elections in recent years. The report shows that the age group's participation has gradually increased, reaching its highest in 2018. The growth also was observed in key swing states, which can prove decisive in who will enter the Oval Office and control the Senate. Experts believe the rise in voting among young Americans is due to the rejection of the policy adopted by U.S. politicians.
The Pew Research Center poll saying already that this generation, 77% of them rejected Trump policies, even back in January. So, of course, there's reason to suspect that what happened to all of us in the last months is going to, that number is going to be equal or larger.
Official data suggests that although the age segment has the least share in the number of voters in U.S. elections, 46% of eligible voters aged between 18 and 29 went to the polls in the 2016 presidential election. Several other polls have confirmed that the enthusiasm to vote is growing stronger among the young American population.
I think there's been a lot of effort to mobilize young voters this year, but also in the past couple of years, because we've seen a lot of different issues come on the scene that are important to younger citizens that maybe they feel haven't been addressed adequately by the current administration or even the previous one. And so there's been some motivation to try and get involved and influence election outcomes so they can influence policy in different directions.
According to the data firm Target Smart, more than 40% of the nearly 5 million voters who are voting for the first time are young people under 30 years old. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Curvello.
French President Macron announced a full national lockdown for at least 1 month. The reason? Positive coronavirus cases doubled or even tripled the last 4 weeks, and the number of fatalities due to the COVID increased drastically. Local lockdowns and curfews are definitely not sufficient to repel the virus. A second lockdown in 6 months' time, many shopkeepers fear for a national bankruptcy.
We will see. For now, we are forced to close. As Macron said, we close the restaurants.
The consequences are dramatic for everyone. We in this fast food restaurant have to sell quickly the meat and the vegetables. Right now, 70 kilos of meat have to be thrown away, vegetables as well. The consequences are even more dramatic for precarious workers.
The first consequence is that we have to close one of our three agencies. Since we're not a basic necessity business, we are obliged to close this evening because it's forbidden for us to organize meetings or general assemblies with co-owners. So starting from tonight, we will suffer a 100% loss of activity.
Bars and restaurants are the most obvious victims of the lockdown, but other sectors are not spared. France is a big airplane manufacturer. Airbus is a European company, but France has an important part in it. The aviation sector is already very affected and will be even more with the second lockdown. Over the year 2020, due to the coronavirus crisis, there will be an estimated minus 10% economic growth. The unemployment rate will probably go over 10% before the end of the year.
Some employees will certainly be fired. They will get partial unemployment benefits because we will not be able to pay their payroll taxes.
We have already been closed for 1 month in March. It has a huge impact on the company's financial health with partial unemployment. I have reduced the number of my employees. I had to fire one.
Macron said that almost 10,000 coronavirus patients will be in intensive care by mid-November. Meanwhile, France has less than 6,000 hospital beds available.
The French government hopes that the full lockdown on the entire territory will push back the coronavirus, but the impact on the economy will definitely be catastrophic. Chris Denhant, Paris.
Thousands of Yemenis gathered in the capital Sana'a and 13 other cities across the country to celebrate the Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary. This year's celebration comes amid the Islamophobic wave raging after reprinting of the insulting cartoons of Islam's Prophet Muhammad in France.
We came here today to renew our loyalty and love to Prophet Muhammad in the time of hypocrisy and fake beliefs.
Today's gathering comes not only to celebrate the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, but also as a response to the French president and his insults against our Prophet.
Rage is growing across the Muslim world at the French President Emmanuel Macron and his attacks on Islam and the Prophet Muhammad, leading to calls for boycotts of the French products. Yemenis gathering here say Islam is the religion of peace and its prophet is a symbol of peace, but some people are seeking to insult him under the pretext of the freedom of speech.
It is known that France is a country devoid of values and in which insults are made against God, the messenger Muhammad, Jesus, Moses and all prophets.
Yemeni ceremony included various cultural and religious events like reciting verses from Holy Quran.
Despite all the hardships people are facing in the country, Yemenis proved that insulting the Prophet of Islam is a red line which cannot be crossed. Abdulatif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The suspected terrorist attack happened at the Notre Dame Church in the city of Nice. A knife-wielding attacker beheaded a woman and killed two other people. Police say several others have been injured. The assailant was shot by police and hospitalized.
We just learned from the television that our church warden has been killed. I'm so shocked. I still imagine him. I still see him walking, lighting the candles.
Police, armed with automatic weapons, put up a security cordon around the church located on Nice's main shopping thoroughfare. Ambulances and fire service vehicles arrived at the scene to help. The city's mayor, Christian Estrosi, visited the scene.
I have to say that Nice, like France, but maybe more than other places in France, today is paying too heavy a price.
The response from the country's Muslim leaders was immediate. The French Council of the Muslim Faith condemned the attack and expressed solidarity with the victims and their families. Nice was the target of one of France's deadliest attacks in recent years, when a 31-year-old Tunisian drove a truck into crowds celebrating Bastille Day on July 14, 2016, killing 86 people. Thursday's attack comes less than 2 weeks since the beheading by a Chechen extremist of Samuel Paty, a teacher who showed the offensive Charlie Hebdo cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad to his pupils in a school near Paris. That was followed by a knife attack on two Muslim women near the Eiffel Tower last week. French President Emmanuel Macron is facing mounting criticism from the Muslim world for refusing to condemn the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and for cracking down on what he calls radical Islam. His stance has infuriated Muslims around the world and led to calls for a boycott of French products. Iran, Turkey, and several other Muslim-majority countries have been the scene of angry protests against the French government over the past week or so. Iranian leaders warned Mr. Macron's approach would only fuel extremism. The Turkish president, whose own cartoon has also appeared in Charlie Hebdo in recent days, has also been vocal.
They literally want to relaunch the Crusades. Since the Crusades, the seeds of evil and hatred have started falling on these lands, and that's when peace was disrupted.
France is home to nearly 6 million Muslims. The Samuel Paty murder had already heightened tensions in the country, and the French president's defense of the Charlie Hebdo magazine in the name of freedom of speech seems to have only added fuel to the fire.
In late March, the United States federal government passed the CARES Emergency Fiscal Aid Package. Back then, almost nobody would have guessed that it would be the only direct economic stimulus to households until after November's elections, or possibly ever. Months of negotiations have proven fruitless. Congress just adjourned for next week's elections, crushing hopes for the widely expected and long-awaited but desperately needed second stimulus package. New polls showed that Republicans and Democrats are being blamed in almost equal measure, reflecting how the elite of both parties seemingly intervened negatively whenever a second stimulus package appeared close.
Both sides are to blame. You got Trump saying he's approved it, and then he's saying Nancy Pelosi is not accepting that stimulus package. And on her side, she's saying it's not what the American people want, and she's not going to let us down by just, you know, signing off on a package that's just not good for the American people. So I would say Congress and all, presidents on the senators and House of Republicans all.
The economic catastrophe wrought by the implementation and handling of the Great Lockdown in the United States has increased the poverty rate nearly 20% since May. Almost a million unemployment claims are still being filed every single week. There is no end in sight to unprecedented demand at food banks. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, they need to have one. There's a lot of people who aren't working, and unemployment doesn't really cover the cost to live. It's expensive to live in Chicago. I live in San Francisco, and it's expensive to live there. There's a lot of people who are unemployed, so I really feel that the stimulus is needed.
The expected second wave of coronavirus has arrived, and many areas of the United States are resorting to the same tactic, economically devastating lockdowns. For many, the math is simple. More lockdowns plus no governmental assistance equals more economic devastation. The second stimulus failure by the U.S. elites could fuel always high abstention and a turn to third parties in next week's elections. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Cab drivers in Barcelona shut down traffic over lack of government support, days after regional authorities imposed a 10 p.m. curfew to limit the spread of the coronavirus. They say they're still waiting for the European Emergency Fund and blame the regional and central governments for not doing enough to help them with the economic fallout of the pandemic.
They have to expedite late payments. They have to put a freeze on the repayment of loans to the banks, otherwise we are dead. They have to bail us out like they did with banks, to bail out everybody, not only cab drivers, but all those who cannot meet their payments.
Taxi representatives who met with the regional transportation officials say they came out empty-handed after they were told to wait for details of the relief funds and provisions decided by Madrid. Juan Luque, one of the 10,500 licensed cab drivers in Barcelona, says he may have to give up his job as the government's moratorium on loan repayment comes to an end and the bank prepares to seize his vehicle for payment default.
The European Relief Fund will not reach us before January or February. For now, only the state has unblocked some funds for 3 months that many are still waiting to cash. I personally got paid only 1 month out of three. I survived by dipping in my savings, and when things get tougher, I will have to take a new loan from family or from the bank.
Critics say the taxi industry has done little to adapt to the rapidly changing urban mobility, as cash-strapped riders seek cheaper, safer modes of transportation.
We can't. The authorities are the ones who set prices, working hours, bank holidays. We had to regulate our business model ourselves. Look at public transportation. It seems COVID does not go down there. They shut down restaurants and bars, and they turn their eyes away when people cram metros and buses.
With a night curfew looming, protesters called off their strike, but they vowed to return and camp out until their demands are met.
While the long-time view is that the taxi industry will eventually recover from the COVID crisis, the question is at what cost, and if policymakers and mobility providers can take advantage of an over-congested public transit to offer cost-effective solutions to riders and commuters. Kusai Kadri, Barcelona.
Foul-smelling atmosphere in France against Muslims since earlier this month when France led a national tribute to a teacher who was beheaded by a Chechen teenager after showing his class the offensive caricatures of the Prophet of Islam. Now a witch hunt against Muslim associations has been launched by the French government. This came after French Interior Minister Darmanin declared, "The Committee Against Islamophobia, CCIF in France, is a backroom for Islamists who strive against the Republic. It is an enemy of the Republic." The Interior Minister repeated that there is apparently an enemy from within that has to be fought. These declarations are increasing tensions amongst the French population. The pressure is so high that the CCIF announced in a statement that it plans to expand its activities outside the European country amid concerns for its safety in the wake of Macron's remarks.
The state cannot admit its role in the rise of racism because it's responsible for an institutional racism, a real Islamophobia. The CCIF is continuously exposing it. In 2020, more than 450 cases of Islamophobia have been registered. Every time, they point to the responsibility of the state and underline the discrimination Muslims suffer from and that the state does not tolerate.
The declaration of the French minister is not an isolated one. A wave of Islamophobia and racism is rushing over France. Masks have fallen. The mainstream media and most of the political establishment spread their hatred against Islam, against migrants, every day.
We clearly see that there is a societal and institutional racism that keeps rising today, especially Islamophobia, because now there is public condemnation of the Muslim community. They are making a confusion and amalgame about Muslims. They keep pointing the finger and stigmatizing an entire community.
The normalization of Islamophobia and racist comments is a very dangerous evolution. And cherry on the cake, Interior Minister Darmanin considers supermarkets with entire halal or kosher shelves as communitarian kitchen that might lead to separatism and to more terrorist acts.
Anger continues to grow, not only among French Muslims, but also the Muslim world after Emmanuel Macron publicly attacked Islam in defense of the publication of derogatory cartoons of Prophet Muhammad. The second wave of the coronavirus goes hand in hand with a strong wave of Islamophobia and racism in France. For decades, French Muslims have been fully part of the society, but the actual rise of racism risks ruining this integration. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
On Wednesday, top Iranian and Italian academics and experts attended the fourth conference on cultural dialogue between Italy and Iran. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the event took place virtually. It was organized by the Alameh Tabatabai University in collaboration with the Sapienza University of Rome and the Cultural Institute of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Italy. The conference focused on literary and archaeological interactions between Iran and Italy.
It is widely accepted that Iran-Italy relations enjoy the longest durability in the history of Iran's relations at durability that coincides with East-West relations in the world. The history of bilateral relations between the two countries dates back to over 2,000 years, which places one country as the cultural and civilizational representative of the East and the other one as the intellectual and civilizational representative of the West.
Bonds in general, politically, economically, between Iran and Italy are very deep. Sometimes these are not very known, in particular the cultural bonds, because of political reasons. Sometimes they are not publicized just to avoid problems with partners of one country or the other. But these are very strong despite our other allies on one side of Iran and on the other side of Italy.
During the conference, Italian and Iranian academics touched on a number of cultural issues. Some drew a parallel between the influence of outstanding literary personalities such as the Italian humanist and writer Francesco Petrarca and renowned Persian poet Hafez on their respective regions of origin, while others focused on the well-established Italian-Iranian collaboration in the fields of cultural heritage and archaeology. Italy and Iran have for a long time been engaged in an archaeological touristic project in the Kermanshah province.
Our Kermanshah project, Sapienza's Kermanshah project, focuses on coupling cultural heritage development and research with sustainable tourism. So we took into consideration the whole road connecting Kastrişehir to Kartengavar, and we are studying this road as a whole and how important it was in antiquity and in the Middle Ages.
Italy and Iran also have a long history of commercial relations with economic interests playing a large role in the relations between the two countries. Max Civili, Rome.
Iranians from all walks of life took part in a rally in front of the French embassy, Tehran, to protest against the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo and the publication of an image of the Prophet Muhammad. They also protested French President Emmanuel Macron for his support of secular laws that allow blasphemous caricatures to be published on the pretext of freedom of speech.
Just like their counterparts in other parts of the world, the protesters called for boycotting France and its products. They said governments should also condemn hate speech and discrimination against Muslims in Europe.
We are here to condemn Macron and members of his government for supporting blasphemous caricatures to be published under the pretext of freedom of expression. Such depictions are a form of hate speech and they are sacrilegious.
We are here to call for protests and boycott of French goods in response to France's stance on the offensive caricatures. God sent the Prophet Muhammad as an ambassador of peace. Macron and his cronies know nothing about Islam. They have no right to link Islam and terrorism.
It's really ridiculous that they name it freedom of speech. They should be aware that Muslims will be stronger than before, and Shia and Sunni are brothers.
Iran has summoned a French diplomat to protest France's stance on the caricatures. The country's foreign ministry told the top diplomat that France is permitting hatred against Islam under the guise of support for freedom of expression. It's a sentiment also shared by the protesters here.
It's a joke that offensive pictures can be published in France under the guise of freedom of speech. This is